Morning, everyone. I want to start off by reading something for you, to you. It's from a man named Jeff Childers. He writes a blog called Coffee and COVID. And he is basically, he's a lawyer down in Florida. He's a born-again Christian. Some of his briefs have actually been used at the Supreme Court. So, and used within the past year, battling for our freedom. And so every day he writes something, and they're really, really, really good. But I wanted to read you something out of his post from, I think it was last week. It says this: the world is looking increasingly chaotic and unpredictable, and it's stressing some folks out. If that describes you, stop it. It's exactly what he says. Stop it. Things are not as bad as they could be, nor are they as bad as they have been. There's been times in America's history and in the history of the world that things were worse. And he goes on and explains different things, different times. But he says this: tough times make strong citizens, and they do. Tough times make more mature believers. Faith-driven believers. It might be good for us to eat a tough times hoagie every once in a while, right? And it keeps us straight. He says, oddly, the parts, everything happening these days that freak you out the most are probably the parts you can't see, right? We read a lot, we hear a lot, but if you put yourself on a news diet for a month, yeah, you would know the price of food's going up. You wouldn't be hearing the news freaking out about everything, and you would be a lot calmer. He says, I taught a Bible study class for almost 7 years. My favorite topic to teach was on the sin of fear and worry. He goes, I know everything that the Bible says on the topic. My Christian brothers and sisters, you should never feel stressed out. Faith and fear are mutually exclusive. Faith forces out fear. Focus on your faith and you'll overcome all your worries and concerns. John 26:33b says, you will have suffering in this world. Be courageous. I have conquered the world. I have conquered the world. Fear and worry are sinful because they show trust in something other than God. If you trust him, then you have nothing to worry about, do you? He really writes some practical things. And then he begins to talk about, for my secular friends, he talks about the history of the Civil War, the Cuban Missile Crisis, assassinations of sitting presidents, different things in our history that made things a lot worse. We weren't alive then, so we look back in history, but we didn't live it. We're living now. And it can definitely take our eyes off of things, but it's not what we're here to do. What in the world? Stop. I just touched my pen once and it had a canary. So now I have to go all the way back. What a way to start. Yeah, now you're seeing all my slides. This is ridiculous. So there we go. Faith over fear and how God wins. So today, I hope you will stick with me because we're going for a ride. We are going for a ride through history. And I'm going to start at the beginning, and I'm going to try to get through as much as I can. I think Mike Antos is actually going to take the rest wherever I leave off. And in 2 weeks, I think Mike is up. So we're going to talk a little bit about faith over fear and kind of put it in practical terms as we go through history, the history of the Old Testament. So I want to start at the beginning. First, we know that God creates everything, right? Genesis 1 and 2. God creates everything, even human beings. And they're different than animals. They're a special creation. He creates the angels. Most people think that he created them on the day that he created the heavens and the earth, because that's where the angels are. But he created the angels. And then after a little bit, we don't know the time period, but Satan rebels. And he takes one third of the angels with him. and they rebel, and they rebel against God. They didn't like it. Satan wanted to be like God. If you were to read through Isaiah chapter 14, I'll just give you one of the verses, Isaiah 14, 14, where Satan says, Lucifer said it. He said, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. Pride is a killer. We talked a little bit about that this morning in the Lord's Supper. Pride, when we think more of ourselves than we really should, pride kills. Pride kills. And that killed Lucifer, and it killed his position because he was a very prominent angel in heaven. But he didn't want that. He wanted the Most High position. And the problem is he's never going to get it because he's dumb. So Satan and one-third of the angels rebel. That's Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28. If you want to look these up, I'm going to have a ton of scriptures today, okay? And I'm going to highlight specific ones for everybody that are important to where we're going. You will be able to get this PowerPoint in case you want to go through it, because I know there's going to be a lot, and I apologize. But then Satan in the garden through the serpent deceives Adam and Eve, right? He comes and he says, hey, look at this thing that God told you not to eat. It looks good. It'll make you wise, just like God, if you just eat it. And Adam and Eve fall. Adam and Eve fall. And that's in Genesis chapter 3, the fall of man, where sin enters the world. And man's sin has far-ranging consequences, because that one act by Adam has devastated humanity up until this day. Up until this day. Sin is like leaven in bread, right? It gets all throughout the bread, and it makes the bread bad. And that's exactly what sin has done. Sin has far-ranging consequences. But what's very interesting, even though man, and here's the point coming across for this one, Adam and Eve, instead of choosing to believe what the Lord said, the simple words of God, they chose to go after what they felt. They chose to go after the thing that looked good, right? It looks good to the eye. The pride of life, it makes me wise, makes me like God. And that's what they wanted instead of God himself. And that's where they went wrong. And that's where we go wrong. When we take our eyes off of the Lord and his word and what he says, and we begin to do our own thing, that's when we get smacked. And it can have far-ranging consequences when we do it, because we know that's what happened. But what's interesting is Satan, even though he tried to disrupt God, God said, no. And Mike went over this on Wednesday. God said, I'm going to bring a redeemer. I am going to bring someone who's going to crush your head. And Mike went through this on Wednesday in great detail. I really appreciate it. So I'm not going to go into detail about any of these things. I'm giving you an overview. But it's precious, because God has a plan. God has a plan. And don't ever think he doesn't. And his plan will win. The next slide I want to show you is the two veins of history. Right? First is God's kingdom. You have the Lord, the creator of the universe, and he has a plan. And he has enacted the plan. And he's working the plan throughout history, throughout the Old Testament. He's working through people and nations and kings and judges and prophets to bring forth his son. But we have Satan's kingdom, and we have Satan who's doing everything in his power to try to stop what God is doing. And we're going to see how Satan works through men and kings and nations and judges to try to stop it. But in each case, God overrides. Sometimes it's very miraculous how he does things. And we're going to see this. But what we're going to see is our attitude and how a sinful man makes his decisions, how they affect his world, and how we, instead of delving off into the fear or the unknown, we need to have faith. We need to have faith in what God's doing, even though we can't see the end of it, even though we might be in the midst of it. We have to have faith. So we see God's kingdom. We see Satan's kingdom. There are two lines of attack. He's going to try and destroy the members of God's kingdom, right? He's like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. We know that. But then he tries to pervert the witness of God's kingdom with apostasy and heresy. If he can't just kill you outright, he's going to get you off the road. He's going to get you distracted and doing things you shouldn't be doing. This conflict will range until Satan is finally thrown into the lake of fire. And that comes out of Revelation chapter 20, verses 7 through 10. Revelation 20:10 said the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet were, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. So this war will be raged until that day. And that day it will end permanently. But right now we're in the midst of that war. We're in the middle of it. And being believers, we're in direct line of it. Because just as Satan said, went after Peter, and Jesus said he wanted to sift you as wheat. But Jesus prayed for him, because Jesus is our advocate. So then you go to Adam's three children. Do you ever think of it that way? Adam's three children? Adam and Eve had two boys to begin with, right? He had Cain, and then they had Abel, two boys, one of which was righteous, one of which was not, one of which did the things that God wanted, one of the things did what he wanted. One of them wanted to come to God the way that God wanted, and the other came to God by the work of his own hands. Cain then killed Abel because there was jealousy. There's probably hatred. There's probably anger because if his brother was accepted and he was not. See, when you do the right thing, you are accepted. And when you do the wrong thing, you have a choice. You have a choice to correct yourself, or you have a choice to keep going down that road. And sometimes that road ends very badly. And for Cain, and actually Abel, it ended horrendously because Cain murdered his brother. 1 John 3:12 says, we should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one. See, Satan's like, hey, after the promise of Genesis 3:15, I've got to kill somebody because I don't know who this is going to be. Oh, it's Abel. He's the nice one. Cain, kill him. Get rid of this guy. He was of the evil one and murdered his brother. Why did he murder him? Because his own works were evil and his brother's were righteous. Satan was the catalyst behind the murder. Satan was trying to stop what God was doing. 1 John 3:12, that's just what we read. God overruled and gave them another son. See, God never wrings his hands and goes, oh no, I didn't see that coming. I guess I'll have to act and do something really cool. No. He knew exactly what was going to happen, and he gave Adam and Eve another son, and his name was Seth. You know what Seth means in Hebrew? Appointed. Appointed. Because Seth was going to be in the godly line of the Messiah. He's in the godly line of the Messiah, Genesis chapter 5. Genesis chapter 5 goes through the 10 generations from Adam to Noah. Seth is in there. So God overrode and said, nope, now the godly line is going through Seth. I'm watching over things. And even though man slip and man do evil things and Satan's trying to destroy it, I win. I win. So how do we win? When things go south, we do not get angry. We do not take our eyes off the Lord. When God is trying to correct us, we accept the correction and we move on. Because God does not want us to wallow in the muck. He wants us to walk rightly. So we do not be like Cain. And you're thinking to yourself, well, Christians could never kill anybody. Okay, David. Right? Okay, Moses. No, it could happen. It could happen. We're not beyond that. But for the grace of God, right? I could be just like that. And then it comes to the flood, and Mike really expounded on this on Wednesday. I'm not going to go into depth because I think he did a fantastic job on it. Satan, by this time, had corrupted almost the entire population, right? We know about the Nephilim. We know about man's heart was always on evil continually. It was a bad time to be alive. You want to talk about a bad time? There's just 8 righteous people in all the land, and everybody else hates your guts. That's great. Wouldn't you love to live there? That's Genesis chapter 6. It says, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man in the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. That's what the Lord felt at that time. Satan was trying to stop the godly line of Seth. He was trying to stop that Redeemer from coming. And men chose to go along with the crowd. They chose to just do what everybody else was doing. Do Christians do that? Absolutely. I was talking to a friend the other day. We were talking about things that come up in Christian circles that are like the new thing, right? N.T. Wright is a guy. He's a heretic, but he's got this new view on Paul. And you're like, wait, what? What do you mean new view? Well, it's a heretical view of Paul. But then you think of like the church-driven, the what was it? The something-driven church? Purpose-driven church? Everyone jumped on that bandwagon. The prayer of Jabez, everyone jumped on that bandwagon. Stop. We have the word of God. We don't need to jump in with everybody. But see, this is what the world does. When something's going in that direction, everybody jumps on board. We need to keep ourselves on the straight and narrow and keep ourselves pure like Noah and his family, because there were only 8. Noah and his family, however, were not tainted by the corruption of the people around them. Genesis 6:8 says, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord, Noah and his family. God stopped the corruption, and how did he have to stop it? With the flood. He wiped everybody out. In fact, it says, if you go on to Genesis chapter 7, and I told you we're going to be moving, we're moving. Frida's going, you know, whoa, this is a lot. But it says this, in 723, or 722, it says, everything on the dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. Everything. He blotted out everything that was on the face of the ground, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens. They were blotted out from the earth. He had to stop the corruption because he had to bring forth his Messiah. And he did. He did what was absolutely necessary through the flood to protect that line. Noah's 3 children. Noah had 3 children. You know who they are, right? Shem, Ham, Japheth. After the flood, Noah gets drunk. He plants a vineyard, he gets drunk. Ham sees his nakedness and dishonors his father. And Satan goes, hey, how about if I use Ham? How about if I use Ham to just completely mess this whole thing up? Because Ham did what was wrong. He didn't honor his parent, his father, right? That's actually one of the commandments. Honor your father and mother. Honor them. Now, I know that a lot of times parents in this world are bad and kids are like, I don't honor my father and mother because they're jerks. But realistically, you still should. Honor your father and mother. Ham did not. Genesis 9:22. Saw the nakedness of his father and told his brothers. In other words, he went and gossiped. He talked. Oh, look at dad. is gossip a thing we should be doing? Or does love cover a multitude of sins? He should have done that instead. And he didn't. What do Shem and Japheth do, however? They walk in backwards without looking at their dad and cover their father's nakedness. They do what's honorable. And that's in Genesis 9:23. They laid it on both their shoulders, walked in backward, covered their father, their nakedness of their father. Their faces were turned backwards. They did not see the nakedness of their father. What did Noah do? Noah curses Canaan. He didn't curse Ham. He cursed Canaan, Ham's children, but blesses Shem and Japheth. So he blesses two of the boys and actually curses the descendants of the one. And that's in Genesis 9:24-27. I'll read 9:27. It says, "May God enlarge Japheth and let him dwell in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant." This is going to come into play later on. The Messiah, however, would come through the line of who? Seth. He would come through, well, Shem. He would come through the line of Shem, right? The Semitic line, not Seth. I don't know why I put Seth. Because I was thinking of Seth. Yeah. But he would come through the line of Shem, not through the line of Japheth, not through the line of Ham, through the line of Shem. So he now he's working with brothers, and he takes one of them and says, now you are the one. It will come through your line. My son, the Messiah, will come through you. Genesis 11:10 talks about that, through 12:3, and then Luke 3:36. So you would have to read that big section to understand what was happening. But see, it was because of a wrong attitude in one of the brothers. And we have to be careful. As young people, you want to honor your parents. We want to honor those who are above us, whether it be our jobs or elders or whatever, you honor. You give honor where honor is due. And people today do not honor anybody but themselves. That is one of the prevailing attitudes of this day. Right? Pride. We're in the middle of Pride Month. Pride is a sin. I'm sick of it. How about we have a humble month where nobody talks about anything? How about that? That'd be great. Just be quiet for a month. No more emails. You know what I'm saying? Done. They give veterans one day, right? Memorial Day. Why not give them a month? They deserve it. I could go on. So then God says, it's not just boys I'm going to be working with. How about a nation? We're going to take a nation and work through the nation. God commanded the people to disperse all over the world. After the flood, he said, go, go. Genesis 9:1. God blessed Noah and said to his sons, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Go. Go all over the place. Get out of here. Beat it. Satan moved to the people to disobey and stay in the same spot. The sin of the people is they want to make a name for themselves. I want to be somebody. I want to be somebody. Genesis 11:1-4. The whole earth was one language. So they all spoke the same words. And they migrated east, and they found a plain, the land of Shinar, and they settled. And they said, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens and make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the whole of the world. They thought they were something. Now, it is true that if men put their brains together, there's pretty much nothing that we can't do together, okay? We've built some incredible things in the history of the world. Right? And you can think of all the things that help us to get along in our daily lives. And it's why we have the things we have. But we can also make some pretty terrible things. But the one thing they wanted to do is be somebody apart from God. And they didn't want to listen. See, sometimes God tells us to do things, and we might not understand exactly why he's telling us to do this, because we can't see the ramifications of doing it and the ramifications of not doing it. But we need to just obey, even though it sounds maybe a little funny. We need to just say, okay, I got you. I don't understand it, but I'm doing it. They, however, put themselves first. and said, "It's us. It's us." So during this time, many false religions started. You know the man named Nimrod? I did a study on Nimrod. Nimrod was a bad man. In fact, it spoke of Nimrod that he was actually one of the first people to go heavily against God. And if you want to talk about the mystery religions, like Mystery Babylon and things like that, they got their start through him. He was actually a very bad man. Well, he's the one that founded Babylon, or Babel, the city. He founded a lot of different cities back then. It says he was a hunter. He was a mighty man, Nimrod. Nimrod was one of the keys that Satan used to create the mystery religions and all the other bad things that were going on. Genesis 10, 8 through 10, it talks about Nimrod. And you can actually go back in history and read about what he was like. God confused the languages. How did he stop this Nimrod and his workings and his philosophy? By confusing the languages and kicking everybody out. Get out. And now you're going to have to get out with your own kind. And the nations were formed. And now God says, I'm going to start working with nations. But I'm going to specifically work with one. So Genesis chapter 11 goes into God confusing the language. 11:7 says, "Come, let us go down there and confuse their language so they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord dispersed them into all the world. And we have now, right, all kinds of German, Japanese, you know, Chinese, Indian, you know, Moroccan, Zambian, Zanzibarian, you name it, we got it. Guess what? Right here. This is where it came from. And God did it to protect what he was doing because Satan was working against it. So then we have God's nation, right? You all know what God's nation is, don't you? God then called a man named Abram. Abram, what were you going to say, Brad? He's laughing. Genesis chapter 12. God told Abram to get up from your country, from your land, from where your comfort zone is, and go to a place that I'm going to tell you. You don't know about it. You've never seen it, but you need to go. Obey. Have faith, Abram. Have faith. Abram could have went, "No, I'm terrified. I can't go there. Can't leave my mom and dad. It's terrible." Nope, go. He packed it up and left. Faith over fear. He went, didn't he? God would make of Abram a great nation, right? The Abrahamic covenant. You will be a great nation. Genesis chapter 12, if you were to read that, it says, "I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing." And then it says, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. Don't mess with his children. God's putting his thumb of approval on this line. Now it's Abram and his children. And the Messiah, as we know, is going to come through this line. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, right? Joseph, 12 tribes, Israel, boom. There you go. You have it. The Messiah would come through this. So Satan's attack, he's looking, he's going, okay, what do we do here? First, I'm going to send them into slavery, right? There's famine in the land. So the children went down to Egypt. Joseph went first, right? He got tossed by his brothers. His brothers played that little game. This is really funny. And we'll tell daddy got eaten by a lion. Yeah, that's real funny. See, you know, and then he got sold into slavery for Potiphar. And now he's in Egypt and he rises and becomes the number two in all the land of Egypt. He could open the grain houses. He could have all the gold and silver he wanted. He could do whatever he wanted to, almost. And then the children of Israel went down there for a famine. And Joseph says, "Hey, just move here." And the Pharaoh said, "Hey, cool, bring your family and have that land over there. That's a good land." And they started to grow and they started to prosper and they started to have flocks and all that other things. And Satan said, "This was a bad idea. So you know what I'm going to do now? That Pharaoh's going to die and I'm going to bring another one in and he's going to hate them. And he's going to put them into slavery. And he's going to try to hurt them. And as they're breeding, what does he do? He says, any child two and under, I'm going to kill. You just kill them. Stop with your birth rate. No more males." So in other words, he knows that the Messiah is coming through this line. He knows it. And he's trying to stop it. And the children of Israel, however, are falling into it. they're obeying, except for one who said nope, and they put little Moses in the basket and floated him down the river. One of them disobeyed. Whenever Satan comes to you as a Christian and tells you to do something that's wrong, guess what you tell him? No, no, I'm not doing it. What if it costs you your life or your job or whatever? No, the answer is no, because God is working through your life. You might be fearful of the things that could happen to you, but right, faith and fear are mutually exclusive. I want to have faith. I do not want to be afraid. Afraid, being afraid causes you to freeze. It stops you from thinking correctly. It stops you from moving. It stops you from doing. Faith, however, causes you to think, causes you to trust, and causes you to act, because you're trusting in the God of the universe. And one lady, woman, had faith, and she obeyed, and she took her son and put him in a basket. And God then would work through Moses. God then would work through Moses. And that's in Exodus chapter 1, the death of the male children. So the boy in the Exodus. So here we are, the children of Israel. They're stuck in the land of Egypt, right? They're loving it. By the way, what are they doing? They eat every day. They have a place to sleep, right? They're fine. Even though they're grumbling because, yeah, you know, we got to make all these bricks and do all these things, they're still fine. So amidst the turmoil, God saved a boy named Moses. It's Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. And I just explained to you how, you know, they did that. God used Moses to bring the 10 plagues upon Egypt and rescue the nation. After all the grumbling, God said, I'm hearing all this grumbling. Moses, go. What did Moses say, by the way, to begin with? He said, I can't speak like that. I don't know what to say. Oh, I can't do it. Is that what you say to God? I can't do it. I can't speak. I can't do. I can't say. No. Finally, God said, you know what? Fine. Take Aaron. But you say yes. Say yes to God. Have faith. Trust him. Don't be afraid of big, bad Pharaoh dude over there. Yeah, he's got the power of the Egyptian army. So what? What did God do to the Egyptian army, by the way? Huh? Isn't that funny? Exodus 7 through 14 is the 10 plagues of Egypt, ending with the death of the firstborn through all the land of Egypt. And then Pharaoh chases the nation, right? Satan has Pharaoh chase the nation through the wilderness, and they're backed up to a river. And Moses, God says, Moses, raise your arms and the waters will part. And they did. And the children of Israel crossed on dry land. But when the Egyptians tried to cross, what happened? What happened? He drowned the entire army of the Egyptians. Chariots, horses, the whole thing. In Exodus chapter 14, it says, Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course. And it says, and as the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. The waters returned, covered the chariots and the horsemen, and all the host of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea, not one of them remained. God can take care of the biggest army, the biggest problem, the biggest whatever it is that is against you. Why are you afraid? It doesn't matter. God can take care of the smallest thing and the biggest thing. And he has shown it time and time again. And the problem is, we're just like these guys, because then they go out into the wilderness and they start grumbling. They start going, you're not feeding us. You're not giving us water. We're thirsty. We're starving to death. We should go back to Egypt. At least we had onions to chew on. And Moses is like, Lord, what do you want me to do with these people? Because they're grumbling. They're grumbling. So he gives them quail to eat, and he gives them water from a rock, and he gives them all these things while they're wandering through the wilderness to show them that he's caring for them. Because Satan, the only thing he wants to do is stop them. And one of the things, it was interesting, is Satan wanted God to get so aggravated that he just wiped them all out. You know what? I'm tired of you. And God actually said that in a couple places in the Old Testament. He's like, I'm hearing all their voices. It's ringing in my ears. This is Bill Luke's paraphrase. I'm just going to wipe them out. And Moses would go, no, Lord, because if you do that, then the other nations are going to go, going to say that you're such a terrible God that you can't even take your people and correct them and make them and bless them and things like that, that you just had to kill them. And he goes, okay, I won't do that. Moses is pleading for the children, just like Abraham pleaded for Lot and the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. He pleaded, and Moses is pleading. So then Moses, as they're wandering through the wilderness, God says, hey, how about if I make a covenant with you and the people? You're my special people now. You're my people. I'm going to work through you people right here. Moses and these people, these are mine. And at Mount Sinai, God gave Moses the law. And he's up there. Isn't that fantastic? Moses is talking to God. And while Moses is up there talking to God, he's taking too long. He's taking too long. So what do we do? Oh, that's in Exodus 19 through 20. But while Moses was up there, Satan stirs up the people and they make a golden calf and they start worshiping and says, this is our God. He's the one that's doing all the good things to us. This golden cow. Isn't that great? Do not make for yourselves any graven images. Well, they didn't have that yet because Moses was still up there, but they should have known better than to make this. And guess who was complicit? Aaron. Thanks, pal. You're supposed to be the spiritual leader. You're not doing your job. Even religious people get off of and out of bounds, don't they? I just mentioned one guy, N.T. Wright. Yeah, he's got all these degrees behind his name, and he's from the Church of England and all these other things. You know what? He's off base. He's off base. He threw justification by faith out the window from the reformers. That's like a Reformation thing. That's like one of the anti-Catholic moves. I am saved by faith, period. And he's like, nope, that's not it. Really? Try again. Even religious leaders go off base. Pharisees, Sadducees, didn't they? Didn't they go off base? Didn't they make a fence around the law and then another fence around that fence and then another fence around that fence? Didn't they do that? Yes, they were wrong. And that's why we can't follow a man. We have to follow the Lord. Now, we have godly people in our lives, and it's great, and we want to walk with them and have them help us and things like that, but I'm not going to follow a man. And that's where sometimes people can go wrong. I'm not following Aaron. Sorry, Aaron, you made a golden calf. You're wrong. So God comes down. Moses comes down. God tells him to destroy the calf, put it in the water. People drink the water. They die. And you're thinking to yourself, wow, that's cruel. Yep, you have to purge sometimes the bad to cleanse what's left. And God did it over and over again because Satan's working through individuals. And God says, I want to keep my nation pure. I want to keep them pure. And they had to go. And that's Exodus 32-7 through 35, and about 3,000 were killed in verse 28. Of chapter 32, it says, the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and that day about 3,000 men of the people fell. He had to correct the situation. Satan was working to destroy what God was doing, and God had to correct it and protect what he was doing. So then you have the tabernacle. How about if I give them a place to worship? Hey, that's a good idea. Now we'll give them a place where they can come and I can sit right there and I can be with them and they can worship me and the priest can come in and do all these good things. Isn't that great? It'll give them a center, a place to worship. So he gives them the instructions. That's Exodus 25 through 31, how to build the tabernacle, how to set it up, who's going to take care of it, who's going to move things, all kinds of things. And as they wandered through the wilderness, Satan attacked in many ways again, even though they had all these things. Remember the spies that went to Canaan? The majority were like, we can't go in there because they're giants in land. They're too big. We can't handle it. We can't take it. We can't do anything. We can't. We can't. We can't. We can't. Should that be a Christian's word? I can't work for God. Like when he tells you, hey, go into the land of Canaan and wipe out all the people, and then I'll give you that land and you'll have it. And you come back and say, we can't do it. That's not the right thing to say. Numbers 13:31. Then the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. you know what? We may be little strength and small in number. But as Chris has always said, and I remember it, one with God is a majority. It does not matter because God's bigger than anybody. And he wins. If it's his will, if it's his plan, if he's working through it, he wins. It doesn't mean you won't stumble and there won't be stumbling blocks along the way, but he wins eventually. So God sent them back out of the wilderness. He said, if you're gonna whine, if you're gonna grumble, back out you go 40 more years, wander around, because I'm not having these grumblers with me. I want all you young people. You're the ones that have it. These guys were all grumbling. And that's what he did. Numbers 14, 11 through 35, he sent them all back out. And all those people who were grumbling and complaining died. That whole generation died. Because I want to go with the goers, as some people phrase it like that. I want the people who want to go and win. You have to have the right attitude because Satan is going to try to tell you, you can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do what God wants. There's too many adversaries. There's too many obstacles. There's too many things in the way. Wrong. Wrong. You can. Satan causes the nation to grumble, complain, and turn against Moses even. God countered by making the nation victorious over and over again. As they began to conquer the nations and take over, God was the one who gave them the victories. And when they obeyed, they were victorious. When they did what God wanted, they were victorious. Satan even tried to get Balaam to curse Israel. Do you remember that one? But what did God do? God caused Balaam to bless Israel. See, Satan tries and he will throw things in your way to try to get you to stumble and to stop. And God says, no, I'm working this out. Just have faith. Don't fear. Don't fear. Numbers 22 through 24 is that whole Balaam curse Israel, bless Israel story. It's right there. The land. So you know what? You have a tabernacle. Now how about the land? After wandering, God brings them into the land of Canaan, and he gives them a few requirements. What is interesting, though, is Egypt had just given up control over the land. They controlled that land, and they had just given it up. Huh. Isn't that God working in his, so that his children can get the land? Isn't that interesting? Second, God opened the waters of the Jordan so they could cross over. And they were going, you think in their mind, they would like remember Egypt and him parting the water so that they could cross over and get out of the way. And he did it again. And they crossed over on dry land to get into the land. And that's Joshua chapter 3. And then he showed himself to Joshua. Remember, Joshua was standing there. There was a man there. And he said, are you for us or against us? And the man said, I'm for the Lord. And we don't know what else he said. But he probably encouraged Joshua to follow and to obey and to not be afraid as they went into the land. And that's Joshua chapter 5, 13 through 50. But see, they were to take all the land. And they were to kill all the inhabitants, every last one of them. And they were to obey perfectly, even when it seemed out of reach. So in other words, isn't it cruel that God would command people to kill other people? That's one of the complaints, right, that unbelievers make. God, he's a cruel God because he's telling people to kill other people. You know what? The people that were in that land had their chance because they knew about Noah and the flood, and they rejected the God of the universe, and they made their own. Because if they took those people out, they could have their temple, they could have their place to worship God, and they wouldn't worry about idolatry and the nations around them and all the gods that they had. Isn't that so funny? Because what did they do? I'm going to go real quick into the battle of Jericho and Ai. God gave them Jericho, right? He gave them the victory as they walked in the first battle they had, Joshua chapter 6. But God told them not to keep anything, but yet one man did. Achan kept some stuff back for himself because it looked really good. And God's never going to know. And no one's going to know because what did he do? He dug a hole and he buried it in his tent. Nobody's going to know what I'm doing. It's all secret. It's in the dark. God knew. And when they went up against Ai, they lost. And Joshua was like, how did we lose? And God said, because someone took stuff. So what did they do to poor Achan? They took all of his stuff and they took Achan and they burned all the stuff and they stoned Achan to death. Because you have to obey. Even if the glint and the glimmer of the world looks really good and I just want to have it, right? That attitude of I just want to have the riches of the world. No one's going to know what I'm doing. I can do this in secret. Nobody will know. Wrong. God knows. Even the darkness is light to him. He knows. Don't do that. Don't be driven by the glitter of the world. At 7:25. So what's interesting is as they get into the land, the Levites, of course, don't get any property. They get property. The Levites only get cities throughout the land in each one of the territories. That's all they get. Why? Because they were to keep the people in line, worshiping God and be able to teach the law and teach the people. And they were everywhere, right? Keep the idolatry out. Keep the bad stuff out. Keep all that stuff out. Isn't that great? So they were given cities in each section. And in 14, it says, and no portion was given to the Levites in the land, only cities to dwell in with your pasture lands, right? In this way, each tribe would have God's influence that would keep them from worshiping him. After the death of Joshua, however, Satan says, oh, leader's gone. By the way, so goes the leader, so goes the nation. If you have a bad leader, guess what? You have a bad nation. I know how that is right now. First, the people did not rid the land of all the Canaanites, did they? Wait, who did, by the way, Noah curse? Do you remember? Canaan, right? He didn't curse him, he cursed Canaan. They didn't rid the land of all the Canaanites. Well, that's not good because they worshiped Baal and Ashtaroth. And Baal, the one who sacrificed their children to the fire. And then second, the Israelites adopted the worship of Baal and Ashtaroth. So instead of listening to the Levites, what'd they do? They listened to the people around them. We do that sometimes too. And I'm not going to make it. That's okay. I'm almost done. So they began to adopt, even though God had given them a provision of the Levites in every corner of the land, they still didn't do what God said. Third, people married Canaanites in violation of God's command. Understand that you, as a Jew, God wanted you to marry a Jew so that you could keep the line going. You could keep his nation strong. He did not want you to marry a woman, a foreigner, because they would drag you away. And that's exactly what happened. In fact, it also happened to another man. He was the wisest man to ever live. What was his name? What was his name, Josh? Solomon. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. And guess what he did? He forgot the God of Israel and gave them all their places of worship. Because that's the power women have over men. So be careful. Because they will drag you under the water and drown you. I'm serious. In a, you know, serious sort of not literal way. Just telling you. So listen, I still, you know, there's still the judges. There's still the kings. And then there's still a lot of other things in the history of Israel that we could go through. And maybe Mike will continue it if he wants. But the whole point is this. And I want to go to the last slide, if I could. Come on. The last slide is your midterm exam. If I could get there. The last slide is your midterm exam. So I'm going to just turn it off and turn it back on again and go to the last slide because I want you to see your midterm. So this thing is killing me today. Your midterm. God has an overarching plan for his people. Okay. He is working in and through, as we've seen, individual people, religious people, a nation, individuals in that nation. Today, he's working through individuals. But he has an overarching plan for his people. Satan, however, has an underarching plan to destroy God's plan and God's people. I don't know if underarching is actually a term, but I figured if God has an overarching plan, Satan has an underarching plan. I think that works out pretty well. It does not matter what Satan throws at you. It does not matter what fear he casts in your life, what things he does to try to stop what God is doing. It doesn't matter. You look at this world and you're thinking to yourself, this is crazy. People are going to die, right? Iran just shut off all their cameras from the international community, the nuclear community, and now they're enriching to 90%. They were at 60%. 90% means they can create a nuclear bomb. One of their clerics came out and said, July 1st, Iran will be completely destroyed. Israel. That's what one of the Iranian clerics came out and said, July 1st. And they're making their bomb. And by the way, Israel just did a long-run bombing run against Syria, but specifically, what city? Do you remember? Damascus. Because Syria and Iran, they're all moving weapons down there into that corner, right? Because Russia's moving down there to get right there so they can all go after Israel because they hate Israel. And you think this world is going crazy. This world is going nuts. Even people in America are going nuts. And there might be some fear. And God's saying, don't. Get your eyes off of those things and get your eyes back on me. Get your eyes back on me. Faith is diametrically opposed to fear. 1 John 4:18 says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not been perfected in love. Cast out fear. It doesn't help. It only hurts in most cases. Secondly, 2 Timothy 1:7, for God gave us not a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind. Fear is diametrically opposed to what God is doing. And we have seen it time and time again. When the children of Israel fell into fear, they lost. And bad things happened. And it's the same thing with us. When we take our eyes off, when we begin to lose focus, when we give into fear or whatever else it is, because there's numerous things that take our eyes off the ball, we hurt. And maybe we even hurt others around us. So that's why Jeff Childers said, stop it. It's hard to stop it, though, isn't it? Because I'm a human being, a sinful human being. But you know what? Get in the Word. Memorize the Word. Read the Word. Get into prayer. Fellowship with your brothers and sisters. Hang around with them. Witness like a mad dog. Get into doing the things that God has called you to do and don't stop. And guess what? God wins. Isn't that cool? That's cool. There's your history lesson, your partial history lesson for today. And maybe Mike will continue that history lesson. I don't know. But we're going to close in prayer. Father, thank you so much for the history of the Old Testament and for what we've seen and for all the examples. It was written for our learning. That's what it says in the New Testament. It tells us this. And we want to learn. We want to learn from what they did, from their mistakes, from their good choices, from their bad choices. We want to learn. And we want to learn how to trust you. And Father, help us to do that. This world is going crazy. And it's gone crazy before. We just think it's going crazy because we're here. And it is. Help us to live for you. Help us to do what you want. Help us to live by faith. And bless us even this week to do just that. Even if we haven't been doing it, maybe it's time to start again and do it over again and live by faith. So help us to do just that. We give you great praise. We give you great thanks because you deserve it all. And we lift this up in Jesus' name. Amen.